Mary Bird Perkins Cancer Center have completed an agreement to expand in what they believe will enhance cancer care resources in the greater Baton Rouge area. Also, Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. Mark will talk about what's coming in 2022. Contentious session possible over redistricting coming soon, as in next month at the Capitol. And John Neely Kennedy, Jr., U.S. Senator seeking re-election, now with two challengers, Luke Mixon and Gary Chambers. Now the news on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for our program. Your number is 877-217-5757. Send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. We start today's show with Edgardo Tenriero. He's the president and CEO of Baton Rouge General, and there have been some big announcements in the last few weeks. As we know, Mary Bird Perkins and Our Lady of the Lake went by the way as far as their long collaboration, and that opened the door for Baton Rouge General's Cancer Center, the Pennington Cancer Center, and Mary Bird Perkins to complete an agreement to expand cancer care services in the greater Baton Rouge area. And Our Lady of the Lake is on its way to doing something differently. But Edgardo Tenriero, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Fine.
Good morning to all the listeners.
Your thoughts about this announcement?
Well, it's really a tremendous opportunity for the Mary Bird Perkins and for the Pennington Cancer Center to come together, collaborate to provide better and more care to cancer patients in the greater Baton Rouge area. And I couldn't be happier with the partnership. It allows us to expand our medical oncology services, more than double the size of number of medical oncologists, opened up an expanded infusion center, and of course, all of the other services that come with that, from social services to nutrition, all in our case at the Pennington Cancer Center in one location. The idea being that as a patient, you will not have to be ping-ponged around. You'll come to one center, and all the services will be provided there. You know, obviously, we've had a long history, over 30 years, with our Pennington Cancer Center, and the Mary Bird has a long history, too. So bringing the two premier cancer centers in the region in a partnership is phenomenal for patient care.
877-217-5757 is your number, and talk@talklouisiana.org if you'd like to respond in that way. Edgardo Tenriero is with us, the president and CEO of Baton Rouge General, and a major announcement. And so you're saying logistically that it will all be in one place, that Mary Bird Perkins will be, I suppose, making a move.
Well, Mary Bird Perkins will continue to have their building and their clinics at the Mary Bird Perkins on Essen, and this simply establishes an additional location for them at the Pennington Cancer Center, and so now patients could choose either of those two locations, and obviously it all depends on what patients want to do, what physicians want to do, but the idea is to be as seamless as possible for those services. What we have here at the General, though, in addition to the outpatient services, is a 32-bed inpatient oncology unit with tremendous nurses and clinicians that are specially trained to treat cancer patients, and that is a piece that obviously those physicians, medical oncologists at the Mary Bird were looking for a place for their inpatients, so that we're providing that for them too. And beyond that, I mean, it's just the ability to access clinical trials will be enhanced. The General has a partnership with the Mayo Clinic, for example, And now all of the patients treated at the Mary Bird and treated at the Pennington Cancer Center will have access to all the tools that the Mayo Clinic provides us. So I know the physicians are very excited about this. It's not just clinical trials, but also tumor boards with the Mayo Clinic and so forth. So a lot of that in the works. And again, that's why I think this is going to be really, really good for patient care in the region.
How long will this process take as far as getting the merger complete?
Well, let me clarify. This is not a merger. We have two independent organizations that will remain independent.
Collaboration. And, that's a better word.
It's a collaboration, partnership. Collaboration is a better word. And that was important for us, and a very important, obviously, for the Mary Bird too. You know, we at the General have had a strategy over the last decade or so of figuring out ways in which we can remain independent of other hospital systems. You know, the whole nation is in this, call it merger mania, where everybody's merging with everybody else. And in the end, I think patient care, you know, loses with that. And so we have a model where independent physicians can come together and practice here. And I think that Mary Bird has the same approach, and that's why it was a meeting of the minds, a meeting of the of our cultures in ways that I think will be very, very positive for patients.
Well, getting back to the question, though, is this something that's done instantaneously, or does it take some time? How does the adjustment go?
Well, this was a fairly rapid opportunity that we both seized. Our first conversations were had maybe 4 months ago. And in that period of time, we were able to iron out the definitive agreements and put them to practice. It's a long-term arrangement. We were not entering into this with short-term view, but more of a long-term view. It'll take us some time to begin to operationalize this, but we made the first big step, which was to open up a medical oncology clinic at the Pennington Cancer Center with Mary Bird medical oncologists, and that started earlier last week. And our infusion center will open up in about a week or so. It's slated to open. So that was the next step. And then another important step was to communicate and let people know that this was happening. So that step was taken. And I think over time, we'll continue to work out the sort of the wrinkles in the in operationally. Mm-hmm. And the important thing is that patients are already being seen and already being taking advantage of the partnership.
It's a 10-year agreement, isn't it?
It's a 10-year agreement, and with additional 10-year opportunities to continue. So yeah, this is a long-term arrangement.
Well, a listener asks about this infusion clinic. It's at the Bluebonnet campus, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a new infusion clinic here at the Bluebonnet campus at the Pennington Cancer Center building. And of course, the Mary Bird also will have their own infusion center at their campus. So it'll be, in a sense, we're thinking of two additional infusion centers. One for each campus.
Another listener asks about what prompted this, and we know it was the disagreement, if you will, between Our Lady of the Lake and Mary Bird Perkins. Were you at all surprised that they could not resolve whatever issues that were in play?
Well, I was to a certain degree. This has been a long, cycle of over 30 years of that partnership, and in fact, one of the reasons we had started our cancer center 30 years ago was because we saw these, you know, the coming of Our Lady of the Lake and the Mary Bird coming together, and that the CEO at the time thought that it would be prudent for us to have our own cancer center. So things come around in big circles over long periods of time. But I think the important thing to emphasize here is that what we wanted, what the Pennington Cancer Center wanted, was additional access to additional medical oncologists. And the circumstances played in such a way that in fact, we were able to get that. And I think that regardless of what would have happened with the relationship between the Mary Bird and Our Lady of the Lake, our goal was always trying to figure out ways in which we could work together. And it so happened that this precipitated the opportunity. But the desire to work together was always there. Circumstances worked in our favor to make that happen in an accelerated way.
We're visiting with Edgardo Tenriro, the president and CEO of Baton Rouge General. The Pennington Cancer Center that is affiliated with Baton Rouge General opened in 1987, so it's been around for 35 years. And we'll talk more with this gentleman. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Caroline Menville Alonso producing today, and a few more minutes with Edgardo Tenriro, the president and CEO of Baton Rouge General. And in Baton Rouge, the city has been touted for the quality of its cancer care for many years, and there has been a new development, quite significant, with Mary Bird Perkins and Our Lady of the Lake severing their ties, and now Baton Rouge General and Mary Bird Perkins have formed a 10-year partnership with a 10-year option. So it's designed to be here for a very long time. And another listener asked about the quality of care. And Baton Rouge, as I mentioned, has been touted as a place that is high quality. But the listener asked, does it compare, for example, Edgardo, does it compare with MD Anderson in Houston? If you have cancer, is this a place where you can get the very best of care?
Yeah, I think that this partnership simply is going to enhance our ability to provide that high level of quality cancer care. With the exception of very, very rare cancers, there is nothing that it's happening from a patient care perspective at MD Anderson that we cannot provide here, especially now with this partnership, and especially with the partnership that we have with the Mayo Clinic now. And so I think that listeners and patients could be rest assured that the Baton Rouge has and will continue to have the best cancer care that they could possibly access. And one of our goals is to communicate that to our patient population, that you do not have to go to Houston to get the best cancer care. You can have it right here, close to home, close to your loved ones, close to your home, to your house, and with your physicians and family close by. Of course, if there is, and this happens, a circumstance where a physician believes that a referral to the Mayo Clinic or to MD Anderson is appropriate, then it will be made. But for the most part, I would venture to say that 95-98% of the cancers can be and should be treated closer to home.
Now, you're an Indiana guy and a graduate of the University of Notre Dame. We've had a few of those on since Ryan Kelly was hired. But you came to Baton Rouge, what, about 13, 14 years ago?
That's correct, yes.
How do we compare? And you also worked, Edgardo has, for hospital systems in other states, big states, Texas, Florida, Illinois. How do we compare as far as the systems in those larger states?
I would say that the advantage that we have in Louisiana and particularly in Baton Rouge, if you think of the major systems that we have here, the Franciscans with Our Lady of the Lake, you got Baton Rouge General, you got Woman's Hospital, you got have Ochsner, and then on specialized care, you have groups like Neuromed, the Mary Bird, GI Associates. I mean, these are high quality healthcare providers, and we are in a unique position to take advantage of that and leverage it. In addition to that, we have the Pennington Biomedical, and so you have all of these pieces together for to really put us in the map, not only statewide but also in the multi-state region here. So I'm extremely happy with how all these four or five major institutions have been able to work together, and we'll continue to work together. And we call it the health district. And the health district is not just a geographical location where all these major institutions are, but it's also an idea and it's a vision of what we could become from a regional perspective. So when I compare our institutions to Houston or Dallas or some of the major centers, we have all the pieces. We have all the pieces to take it to the next level. And that's why I think this collaboration with the Mary Bird is so important, but also why the collaboration between all the health systems in the health district is important.
And I can't let you go without asking you about the pandemic and how that has affected care and how you have been able to withstand all the issues that are involved with patients and personnel and doctors, nurses. How's that process?
Well, what these institutions and these nurses and clinicians have been able to accomplish, not just at the general, but at the other hospitals, the Lake and Ochsner, Lane, and all the hospitals in the region has been phenomenal. We have been able to collaborate when it mattered, and we have been taking care of thousands of folks over this last five now with this fifth wave, and it's a testament to the resiliency of the institutions that take care of patients. We collaborated with LSU, we collaborated with Pennington, and we collaborated with each other to take care of patients. And I couldn't be prouder of all the clinicians involved in this, from the respiratory therapists to the pharmacists to the nurses to the intensivists to the internal medicine docs. Everybody in our labs has been phenomenal. And again, a testament of how when it really matters, we can come together and do what's best for this community.
How is it right now?
Right now, the Omicron, by the way, I had Omicron 10 days ago, so 12 days ago, even though I was vaccinated. I had not gotten my booster. So Omicron is much milder, of course. We still have people in the hospital. We have about 30 inpatients and maybe about five or six in the ICU. And our mortality rate is so much lower than it was before. You could barely see a blip in the mortality, even though we have a lot of cases. So it's better than past waves, but it's still a huge challenge to staff the hospital, because of course we have to take care of not just folks with COVID, but also regular conditions. So I think for the most part, all the hospitals are doing okay. The staffing is number one challenge, and will continue to be for some time. And a lot of work on the part of all of us to beef up our relationship with the various nursing schools to increase the pipeline of nurses and clinicians. But I would say that overall, it's been it's been a that this last wave, the Omicron wave, has been much less stressful than the other waves.
Are hospital workers at Baton Rouge General required to be vaccinated?
We encourage vaccination, but we have not made it a mandatory requirement. Of course, now with Omicron, we know that even those vaccinated, who are boosted, can still get Omicron. So, I think the emphasis on vaccination continues to be very important, particularly for at-risk populations. If you're older, if you have other conditions like diabetes, obesity, or anything that could make things worse, highly encouraged. We've achieved roughly, I think we're sitting in at around 85%, 87% vaccination rate, which is very good. And we've been able to accomplish that without making it mandatory. Of course, we're wearing masks that remains mandatory, even if you're vaccinated. And we probably will continue that throughout the flu season until later in the summer.
We're going to wrap it up with Edgardo Tenriero, the president and CEO of Baton Rouge General, and then we'll hear from Mark Ballard of The Advocate. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number, and we'll take a short break and return with more from the man who runs the show at Baton Rouge General, Edgardo Tenriero, after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, is next up, and we're wrapping it up with Edgardo Tenriero, the President and CEO of Baton Rouge General. And we started discussing the partnership that will be in place for at least 10 years and probably more between Baton Rouge General and Mary Bird Perkins. And Ray in Denham Springs has been waiting for some time. I want to slide you in, Ray, before we go to Mark. Ray, you're on with Edgardo Tenriero. Hi, Ray.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, what is the percentage of vaccinated people that are hospitalized, and what is the percentage of unvaccinated people that is hospitalized at your facility?
All right. Do you have those numbers, Edgardo, as far as those who are vaccinated and those who are not?
Yes, I can talk in general about the trends that we're seeing. I don't have the exact numbers with you, but I'll be happy to share those with you later via email, or maybe you can mention
okay,
it.
Okay. Well, is it fair to say that most of those who are hospitalized are unvaccinated, or is that?
Yes, most of those hospitalized are unvaccinated with comorbidities. But we do have some breakthrough cases like we have had in the last couple of waves. So we still recommend, obviously, to get vaccinated. If you have not gotten vaccinated, please consider it. And know that particularly if you have certain comorbidities such as obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and so forth, you're at much higher risk. And so, and also if you're older. If you're in your 60s, 70s, 80s, highly recommended to get vaccinated.
Well, thank you, Edgardo. Appreciate it. Let's talk again soon, sir. Happy New Year.
Thank you. We'll do it again. Thank you. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, and Picayune, he is with us, and he has a front-page story today since we're talking about COVID and Omicron. New Orleans stands alone with latest mask mandate. New Orleans joined several major cities yesterday by reestablishing mask mandates in reaction to a dramatic surge in COVID-19 cases. Mark, New Orleans, of course, is getting ready for Mardi Gras. And last year, 2 years ago now, hard to believe, 2 years ago, that turned out to be a disastrous proposition. But right now, what is the reaction to this latest move?
Well, I think that a large part of it there are two things. One is that New Orleans was one of the epicenters back in March 2020. And so they tend to be a little more skittish about these sort of things. The other thing that is going on is that this new Omicron variant is not as deadly as the earlier variants, at least if you have been vaccinated. If you've been vaccinated, then it's a good chance that this will just be a bad flu and not something that'll put you on a respirator. And then the third thing that's going on is that the schools are reopening across the country, and I think that there's a political undertone of the leadership worried about what the people are going to be reacting to if their kids are forced out of school for any period of time.
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard, and we will talk about various and sundry matters with him. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, Bob Marshall has written extensively in The Advocate regarding the consequences to Louisiana regarding climate change. There's a chunk of ice, for example, in the Antarctic, the size of Great Britain, that's about to fall into the Atlantic, significantly raise sea level rise, which will be catastrophic to Louisiana. And not one Republican representative in Washington will vote for President Biden's environmental climate change protection. So the next time Louisiana gets a hurricane, I would ask the president, don't send a penny to Louisiana.
All right. Well, I don't think you really mean that, David, but we do have some people in Washington who seem to be voting contrary to the needs of our state. And people like John Kennedy, for example, he says, well, look at these bills. They may have a few good things, but they have more bad things than they do good things. And you have to vote for bills on the whole. Does he have a point, Mark?
Well, that is the narrative that the Republicans are using, not only for the Build Back America program, but also for the voting rights legislations as well. So, I mean, yes, they're full of these bills are full of things that are don't get much mention to them.
All right.
And so whether you agree or not has to be where you are politically.
Today, another front page story, and this one's a big one. Charles Lucier, the education reporter for some time for your newspaper, Baton Rouge Teachers Union protest over the school district's handling of COVID-19 did not result in any additional school closures Wednesday, although some schools reassigned people to cover classes for the 760 school-level staff who did not come to work. The East Baton Rouge Parish Association of Educators called for school employees to not show up for work because Superintendent Cito Narcisse did not respond to demands that he move the district back to virtual learning until COVID cases abated. Now, this is something that they called the bluff of the teachers union and went on without 760 school-level staff, but can this continue indefinitely, Mark?
I think that not the response, but what happens with the Omicron surge that we're seeing now, it will go a long way to decide, you know, whether or not the schools will remain open. I mean, this was a win for him because the labor unions, not just here, but I mean, Chicago, where the labor unions are stronger, and New York City, where the labor unions are stronger, were able to kind of postpone the openings of the school. But a lot of parents want to see those schools open, want to see their kids back in the school, in the classroom, because the numbers are showing that this virtual learning thing is not really working as well with younger students.
Well, another listener notes, following up on David in Atlanta about this story that's also in your newspaper today, a federal judge in New Orleans has ruled that a wetlands damage lawsuit against six oil and gas companies with potentially vast consequences should be heard in the 25th Judicial District Court in Plaquemines Parish instead of federal court. This is a ruling from U.S. District Judge Martin Feldman saying the oil companies failed to prove that their development of dozens of wells developed by Humble Oil during World War II was actually overseen by federal agents. So this is a suit that affects a lot of the giants in the industry, and it's something that could have potential implications of significant proportion. What do you think?
Well, it did, because I know the oil companies are hoping to get into a slower moving, more conservative federal court and out of some of these state district courts. And I think that the potential, though, is that there are literally millions of these abandoned wells across the state. That's where the Seven Sisters came in and they started it up. And then after a while, it wasn't producing enough oil for their bottom line. So they sold it to smaller oil companies and then sold again and sold again and then abandoned. And now Now, the landowners, for the most part, are having to figure out what to do about these leaking and potentially dangerous abandoned wells. And this is lawsuit was one of them. The state's come up with another plan. But the lawsuit is one of them where they say, come back in here and clean this up. And this is a, this ruling, though it's, you know, in Plaquemines Parish, and it is one that could have ramifications across the state down the road.
Right. Well, Shauna Sanford, the spokesperson for the governor, says once again, the governor is pleased with the ruling. As he has said previously, these Louisiana claims should be heard in a Louisiana court. And this involves BP America, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, Shell. It's the big movers and players. And in a joint statement on the ruling, the Louisiana Mid-Continent Oil and Gas Association and the Louisiana Oil and Gas Association said even if the cases remain in state court, proving damages is likely to be difficult. 877-217-5757. And we segue to reapportionment, which is coming soon to the Capitol, and the discussion should be lively. And it's largely because there isn't a governor to rubber stamp what the Republican legislature will likely do. Is a collision inevitable, Mark?
I think there will be a collision in the end, and we'll find out how much the governor's power can in blocking a veto override, if I got that out correctly. Because I think that what we're going to end up with is a fight over whether or not there's going to be a second minority-majority district, which would mean that the Republican congressional delegation would drop by one. And that's something that that Washington doesn't, or at least the national Republicans in Washington, don't want to see. And so I think we're going to see a fight. But we'll also be seeing a fight over the House and Senate districts, where about half of them are going to have to change dramatically to hit the proper numbers.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on with Mark.
Good morning, gentlemen. There's a policy that was in place starting in 1975 of keeping U.S. oil off the world market. That was because of the oil embargo that OPEC set up. Well, that policy was changed in 2013, and now U.S. oil is being able to be sold on the open market along with competing with other prices. So they're basically pumping all our oil out and selling it. So anyway, that's another thing that's going on.
All right. And another listener notes, this is a story from a few weeks ago, and I don't believe we mentioned it, and it is worthy of mention since we're talking about this. Taylor Energy last month agreed to pay $475 million to settle litigation with the federal government over a 17-year leak of crude oil, the longest in U.S. history, from its hurricane-destroyed production platform 20 miles off the mouth of the Mississippi River. So there is occasional litigation that does resolve in settlements of significant matters, and we saw that with BP, and perhaps the state is on its way to getting a windfall from the damage that oil companies have done to the coast of Louisiana, and even the oil companies acknowledge that they damaged the coast. They just don't believe they damaged it as much as they have been accused of. So it will be good to see how this works out. And we do have to take a break. 877-217-5757. We will return to the phone lines with Mark Ballard of The Advocate when we return after this quick pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Mark Ballard with us, as he is on most Thursdays. We are always pleased to get his insights on matters near and far. Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Henry, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Mark. You know, I know both y'all got good ears and y'all listen to a lot of things. Could y'all explain to me what arguments the Republicans are going to use to claim that they're not racist, yet they want to keep from having two black districts in the congressional reapportionment?
All right. Mark, what do you think?
Well, the arguments that have been raised so far is that the plan that we have in place now has been approved by the Department of Justice, and that really all it needs is a little tweaking around the edges. And so that's what they're going to say, you know, and then let the numbers play out. That's what they are saying now.
Well, the state has a third population African American, and we have six congressional seats, so six, one-third of six is two. So it's pretty easy to see that it's a logical thing, but when it comes to politics, it's not always the case. And these incumbents like things the way they are. And that.
Well, the key thing here is that it's where the African-American communities reside. And so the key will end up being whether Baton Rouge gets a will be the base of a second minority-majority district, because that's about the only way that it's going to work. And that'll require cutting up the second district.
But we've seen Kip Holden and Sharon Weston Broom win in East Baton Rouge Parish, which when you throw in Central and Zachary and Baker, it's about 50-50. So you don't necessarily have to have a black majority population or voting base to have a black person as the representative. So it might be a case in which we do it like that, and that would make the, at least it would ensure most likely two Democrats and four Republicans, which would be closer to what the state is, about 60-40 Republican over Democrat in an average race between a non-controversial Republican and a non-controversial Democrat. 877-217-5757. I'm sorry, Mark, go ahead.
Interestingly enough, is that the plans for the two different minority-majority districts would put those numbers closer, within 51-52%, which makes it a competitive seat. What we have now are basically Republicans dominating 60-80% white in their districts, and the blacks are, 80% black in their districts. So,
well, right now, pardon me, we have six members of Congress, obviously, one Democrat, Troy Carter, five Republicans, and Mike Johnson, Julia Letlow, Steve Scalise, Garrett Graves, Clay Higgins, and all five of the Republicans voted to negate the election won by Joe Biden in a landslide. And Donald Trump, and listeners have asked me to play this, and it did happen on Morning Edition right before our show. Steve Inskeep was talking with the former president, who did agree to an interview with him the other day, which is admirable, but the interview ended faster than anticipated. Here's how the end of it went between Inskeep and Trump.
They said, "Sir, you don't have standing." I said, "Wait a minute. I'm the president of the United States. They just rigged an election. Hundreds of thousands of votes in different states. They just rigged an election. We got a number of votes that I think you'll agree no sitting president has ever gotten the number of votes that I got. No
a lot
sitting
of votes,
president
that's true.
Has ever
in
gotten
a lot of
no
lot of
sitting you, president. You I, nobody believes. You think Biden got 80 million votes?
It's true.
I don't believe
it's
it.
It's true that you got more than any sitting president
in
the election you disputed.
How come he couldn't?
If I can, Mr.
Biden,
President, Mr. President.
Let me ask you this question. How come Biden couldn't attract 20 people for a crowd? How come when he went to speak in different locations, nobody came to watch, but all of a sudden he got 80 million votes?
If you're forgiving me, maybe because the election was about you. If I can just move on to ask, are you telling Republicans in 2022 that they must press your case on the past election in order to get your endorsement? Is that an absolute?
They're going to do whatever they want to do. Whatever they have to do, they're going to do. But the ones that are smart, the ones that know, you take a look at how Carrie Lake is doing, running for governor. She's very big on this issue. She's leading by a lot. People have no idea how big this issue is, and they don't want it to happen again. It shouldn't be allowed to happen, and they don't want it to happen again. And the only way it's not going to happen again is you have to solve the problem of the presidential rigged election of 2020.
Mr. President, one more question. I want to ask about
all right, and there goes Donald Trump. He's gone to the races, didn't want to answer any more questions. And I would think that Johnson and Letlow and Scalise and Graves and Higgins, they take their marching orders from Donald Trump. It is the party of Trump, Mark.
It is. I think that, and I don't think this is going to happen, but should the Republicans continue to lose the House and the Senate in 2022, then he's not going to carry as much weight. as he does now. I mean, yes, it's politics. Yes, they're on board with him, but it really comes down to the numbers at the end of the day, and that's where the loyalty lies.
Right, but there's a good chance Republicans will regain the House, and they may very well regain the Senate. Stuart downtown. Stuart, good morning. You're on with Mark.
Hello. Can you gentlemen hear me?
We hear you.
Oh, great. Thank you. And Mark and Jim and the audience, good morning as always. I'd just like to comment that it is so disgusting, this racial climate that we live in. I live in a very multicultural bubble world family. And to have all of these dynamics and their cultures, it's so rich. It's so enriching. It's so joyful. It's so peaceful. Just about everybody that I hang with, they're so disgusted with this staunch black-white thing that people would just vomit. Mark, will you guys conduct a survey as to why people are so polarized today? And because clearly it is not benefiting the state of Louisiana. We still rank last in so many.
All right. What about Stewart's concerns?
Being able to pay for surveys is not part of my portfolio. We need to talk to my bosses on that. But I think that a lot of the polarization comes from the fact that the parties have identified issues that, charge up people, and they keep pressing those issues. And so you keep seeing that. I mean, it's like they're scratching that itch. And I think part of our problem with the racial issues is that we've never really flat out confronted what went on, and not in a way of identifying the history of what went on. And that thing, I think that needs to be kind of the first step. It's like a 12-step program, where you have to the first thing you have to do is say, I'm a drunk. Mm-hmm.
Mike Wolf, the libertarian attorney, who will be with us tomorrow. He writes, in no way is it necessary that blacks have two majority congressional districts to have fairness. He says one-third is not a majority anywhere. Well, Mike may have a point, but whites generally vote for whites, generally, and blacks generally vote for blacks when given a choice. But black people, as we know through the years, have voted for whites far more often, because many times whites are the only people on the ballot. But to give you an example, Mark, the U.S. Senate, here we have the black people, 13% of America. I think right now there are only three members of the U.S. Senate who are black: Cory Booker of New Jersey, Tim Scott of South Carolina, and Raphael Warnock of Georgia. And so that's not representation of the population as a whole. And in Louisiana, it just makes no sense to try to put all the black people in South Louisiana in one district, but that's what they've done by putting North Baton Rouge in the New Orleans district. And if North Baton Rouge were in the 6th Congressional District, it would be competitive, as it was when Don Cashew won over Woody Jenkins in 2008. And, of course, Garrett Graves or any Republican running does not want that to be the case. And so I would imagine Graves will fight hard to keep things the way they are.
I imagine they all will fight hard to keep the things the way they are, because they won in those districts, right? So they think they're perfectly fine the way they are. But I think having a more competitive race will ease a lot of these tensions, because if Garrett Graves had to speak to the people who live around him for the most part and what their wants and needs are, then he'd have to kind of modify to what some of the other constituents he has. And I think that would make statesmen, which was, I think, what they were trying to do when they wrote the Constitution in the first place, was to try to kind of represent a group of people in a geographic area, but represent all of them. Right now, unless you're a Republican, and you're not getting represented in any way in Washington.
Well, Mark, we'll call on you next week, and tomorrow we'll not only hear from Mike Wolf, but also Luke Mixon, who was at the Baton Rouge Press Club earlier this week. And he is in the race with Gary Chambers. And if a Republican were to get in the race, as I said yesterday, we could have a runoff, and it could be Kennedy versus Nixon. We had Kennedy versus Nixon in 1960. Could be Kennedy versus Nixon in 2022. Until tomorrow, signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Thanks for joining us. Stay safe and stay tuned.